You're listening to Talking Travel, your number one source for travel news, reviews, and in-depth travel journalism. Broadcasting live from Florida's Sun Coast on the Travel Talk Radio Network. Don't forget you can listen to us online 24/7 at ttrn.com. And now, here's the travel guys, Marcus and Roy.
Good morning, and this is Roy Lowy, and welcome to Talking Travel on the Travel Talk Radio Network. My guests today are Mr. Evan Eggers, president of O2Cruise.com, with the latest in cruise news. Susquehanna River fisherman Dave Woodman will be with us, and we've got a funny story on that one. Destination Worldview associate producer Bob Fisher will be with us as well. And grassroots travel story Great Train Travel with Kay Fernandez. And reporting on the never-ending travel scenes around the world, Mr. Johnny Jett. We've already got Evan, so stay tuned, or you might miss out on some of the travel updates, fun places to go, and still have money to get in your pocket to spend when you get there. Good morning, Evan.
Hello, Roy.
We usually do a little commercial in the middle there, but we've got kind of a busy show today, so I thought we'd just go straight to you and have a chat with the. What's the latest going on in this wild cruise news? I mean, in this whole cruise world with everything that's happening down on the Gulf Coast?
Oh, yeah. I mean, there really has been. It's been obviously, with the hurricanes, there have been ships rerouted and all that kind of stuff, which on a normal day would be newsworthy, but with all these hurricanes, it's become kind of ordinary, not even worth talking about.
Well, exactly, and some of the just juggling some of the ships around, and in fact, I noticed where Carnival Cruise Lines set October 2006 as its return date for its cruises from New Orleans, and that's a bit away.
Yeah, that's right, absolutely. And in fact, the last time we spoke a couple of weeks ago, what was newsworthy at that point was that a lot of the Katrina evacuees who had been invited to go on board the Carnival cruise ships in New Orleans, which are the Ecstasy and the Sensation, hadn't wanted to simply because they thought it was farther away from where they could get services from FEMA and farther away from the stuff that they would need. And as a result, but the good news is since then what's happened is they are using those ships now to house emergency workers, firefighters, policemen, government workers, other emergency workers. So they're going to good use, but it's kind of interesting. I don't know if you've been following the news in the past couple of days on this subject. Carnival's being put under a microscope for this. So they really did. They went out of the way. Carnival did. They had to cancel over 100,000 people's cruises, inconvenienced a lot of people, and they made these ships available. Now they're being put under a microscope, kind of tarred with a broad brush of FEMA mismanagement.
They were housing most of the police and rescue people, weren't they?
Yeah, absolutely. Yes, they were. That was a primary residence for the police and firefighters and EMTs and everything else in New Orleans. And, right now, since the Congress is basically pouring over everything that FEMA has done to look for problems, they're really putting Carnival under the microscope. We'll see what happens. The media is kind of having a frenzy with it.
Well, in fact, they had moved the ship, and the workers stayed behind because they needed to do some work, but they wanted to get the ship out of the way, and I guess they moved it to Mobile, Mobile, huh?
Well, that's right, the Holiday. The Holiday is over in Mobile.
Right, that's the one. Yeah, the Holiday is there. Uh-huh.
Yeah, it's docked there now, and there are evacuees and workers on it as well. They're only about, they're not entirely full either, so that's part of the problem with making people look askance at it, but it's certainly, whatever blame is to be portioned, I will be very surprised if it ends up in Carnival's lap. It seems to me it's just a matter of organization and the way this whole thing was such a, it's never been done before.
Now, they've also moved up this passport date, I understand.
Yeah, that's right. Well, it's actually, they moved it up. So this relates to everybody who's traveling internationally, not just cruisers. The government announced in April 2005 that they were going to require, at the end of this year, for anybody who is coming back to the U.S. after December 31st, would be required to have a passport, for example, coming back from Bermuda and the Caribbean. There's a big hue and cry from a lot of people saying that, people couldn't get passports that quick, the passport authorities would be overwhelmed with requests, right, so forth and so on. So now, about a month ago, the government decided, oh, no, after all, we're pushing that date back. So now people are probably good and confused, but basically there is no change coming up on December 31, 2005 anymore. You can still travel to the Caribbean and Bermuda if you're a U.S. citizen with just a certified birth certificate and a driver's license. And that requirement has been moved back to December 31, 2006.
December 31, 2006. Okay.
Exactly. So now that if you're going to or from Canada, Mexico, Central and South America, the Caribbean, and Bermuda, you'll be required to have a passport starting December 31, 2006.
So I guess everybody a little bit more than a year now.
Exactly. And now, you know, people who already were on the ball and ran out and got passports anticipating the earlier date that's no longer the case, they should still be happy because a passport is still the best thing to have. It's the most definitive proof of identity and citizenship. It helps speed you through immigration. So for those of you who are listening, even if you don't need to have a passport for traveling internationally to Bermuda, the Caribbean, just get one anyway. It's a better thing to have.
I couldn't agree more. And just on a quick note, we've just got a minute or so. Tell me about this other situation that you had mentioned on one of the other cruise ships with the slow engine.
Yeah, so the Norwegian, I hate it when cruise lines do this. Nobody likes to get on board their ship and find out that something's wrong. They're going to miss a port of call or multiple ports of call. And generally, the cruise lines are good about that. They notify us in advance if there's any kind of a problem. We can notify our customers. No big deal. Norwegian, for whatever reason, needs to be called on the carpet for this. Norwegian Dream had one engine fail on Norwegian Dream on June 21st, another one on August 4th. The impact of this is that they haven't been able to go as quickly. There's no safety problem, but they can't sail as quickly. So they've been skipping certain ports here and there, but they're not telling their customers until the customers get on board the ship or when they're getting ready to board, which is ridiculous.
That's definitely ridiculous.
And, you know, thank heavens, because we pore over the news. We knew about this in advance, and we warned our customers in advance, even though we hadn't heard from Norwegian. And sure enough, we just had a customer get off the Dream this past weekend and say, yeah, they got on board. There was no warning in advance other than the fact that there was a note saying, by the way, we're not calling it whatever port of call it was. And, you know, we had gotten no notification from Norwegian in advance. And the thing that makes me doubly mad is one of Norwegian's spokespeople was quoted as saying, when the media approached them about this, the Norwegian spokesperson said, well, gee, the reason we couldn't notify the customers in advance is that most cruises are booked through travel agents, so we don't have the customer's contact information. My head almost exploded.
Yeah, exactly.
So they didn't notify. All they need to do is notify the travel agents, which happens all the time, and we notify the customers. I mean, hello.
Right. And then the other thing is, once again, you know, check with your provider and find out if there's anything, any changes, I guess, is always the best start.
Yeah, it can't hurt. That's right.
Evan, thank you. We've got to run, and once again, thanks for updating us on what's happening out there in the cruise news.
Absolutely. Have a great show, Roy.
Thanks very much.
Bye-bye.
Well, that was Evan Eggers of O2Cruise.com. We're going to go to break, and I'll be right back.
Totally gone native. Totally playful. Totally never tried that before. Totally Club Med. Introducing the new Total All-Inclusive Club Med with unlimited drinks, all-day dining, world-class accommodations, 64 sports and activities, all gratuities and more for a totally great price. So you can totally forget your wallet. Call today for a totally unlimited, totally together, totally barefoot time. Book now and save on a 7-night total all-inclusive vacation to Club Med in the Caribbean, Bahamas, or Mexico. Call today. You'll totally want to do it again.
Well, I'm back, and I'm joined by a very interesting gentleman, and I must tell you, it's a very interesting story, and we're going to chat with Dave Woodburn, who, along with Ralph Wally-Eyed Walker, took me on an incredible boat ride down the Susquehanna River through Tioga County, and, you know, the question I most often ask is, where do you go next? And I just want to tell you, that's where I want to go next. Good morning, Dave, and thanks for joining us on Talking Travel.
Good morning, Roy. Nice to be here.
I just want to, we've just got to relate this story. We've only got about 4 minutes, and it was a three-hour ride down the Susquehanna, and I just like to, first of all, explained that I showed up on this dock going on a cruise across to Hiawatha Island, which I thought was a long cruise. It turned out to be about 100 yards. And when I came back, there you guys were sitting in this boat expecting the Hooters gal, and there this little round guy shows up and says hello, and you welcome me into your boat, and we sit down, and you tell me, hey, Roy, gee, the river's been low and the fishing hasn't been so great, but let's look in the cooler. We've got some Diet Pepsi and we've got a Coke, and underneath all that, we might even have some beer. What would you like? And that's when it all started. So anyway, what we did, and I'll let you tell us part of it, but we get in the boat, and we never even turned the motor on. We just kind of floated down the Susquehanna, and we just put away some beer and the occasional whiz over the side, and cruise down a ways, and we'll fill them in on when we ended up at the hotel. But just tell us a little bit about the fishing on the river when the river is right and things are going well.
I'll do that, Roy. As you know, and you were on the river, the current level of the Susquehanna River is about 4 or 5 feet lower than it should be or average at this time of year, and it's absolutely the fishing has slowed down as a result.
It was really shallow when we were there, yeah.
The conditions for fishing are poor, but we can find occasionally some fish, and there are walleye, there's bass, there's pike in the river, catfish, a lot of carp. So there's a lot of species of fish, and normally you can catch them. This time of year, it's difficult, especially with the water this low.
Well, you know, I think that it really didn't matter. I mean, everybody goes out to fish and catch all that, but I think all part of it is just getting out there, getting on the river, and just enjoying yourselves, and that's basically what we did. I mean, we never even threw a line over.
Roy, I have to tell you that after that day, my fishing partner Ralph was absolutely enjoyed the time. Normally, he can't be on the water without his fishing pole in the water or in his hand. He sat there for 2.5-3 hours and just enjoyed the company, and that's not like him.
Well,
and afterwards, he just said he had a great time.
Well, we all had a great time, and what was really wonderful, we've got to share this with the audience because it was so terrific. And we finally drift down to the hotel I was staying at, I think that was the only time we started the motor on the whole trip. And we pull the boat up, or you pull up the boat right up onto the grass.
Right to the bank.
Right. And there were about 3 weddings going on at the same time. And so, you know, we kind of looked it over. We were, you know, we had been eating some cheese along the way, but those hors d'oeuvres on the tray looked pretty good, but everybody else was in tuxedos and suits, and here we were in a pair of shorts and maybe a few more beers than we should have had.
Yeah, we kind of stumbled up the bank.
And when we get up there, we got kind of strange looks and in our shorts and hats, and we wander up. We had a drink at the bar. I get checked in, and but you tell me then when you left there, when you were walking out, you walked right into the middle of it.
Well, we had to walk through the receiving line, and we were dodging pictures, and everybody's hugging, and everybody's thanking each other, and all this stuff. And Ralph and I had to walk through this line and to get back to the boat. So we chuckled, and we went back down to the boat, and we sat, we were actually looking up at these 2 weddings, and then we're sitting, and we noticed some guy standing on the bank waving at us. And that was very funny of you to do that, Roy.
Well, it was really great, and I think I mentioned when we walked through on the first bit, and they kind of looked at us strange. I just felt like saying, we're the cousins from down there in West Virginia. We're just in, and but it would have fit right in. The only thing we didn't have on our hands were the fishing poles, which would have really topped it all off. But on a good day, I guess, that was a good day for me. And I think what it's all about is, again, getting out in the water, enjoying the beauty, getting out in the fresh air and nature. And, that's what life's all about. And what we'd like to do is when the river gets back up and you guys are out there catching some fish, have you and Ralph give us a call where we can set up in advance and update us on just what's happening on the Susquehanna River.
Well, we want to let you know. We've been on the river for many, many years, and we love this area. And we'd love to keep you informed. And again, your company is always welcome up here in Owego.
Thanks, Dave. And you guys really made me feel really feel welcome. It was a very special day for me in Tioga County. It's a beautiful, beautiful place. I got to run. We'll talk to you soon.
Well, just one thing. I was a bit disappointed that the Hooter girls weren't there, but we settled for what we got, and we enjoyed it.
You know, they may have spoiled the whole thing.
Yeah, I think they would have.
We wouldn't have been able to take a whiz over the side.
We'll
talk to you later. Thanks, Dave.
Bye-bye,
Ron. Okay, bye-bye. Well, I've got to tell you, it was really a wonderful, wonderful experience, and those two guys were really great. I really enjoyed it, and it was just a terrific time. We're going to go to break, and you're listening to Talking Travel on the Travel Talk Radio Network and worldwide at TT.
Knows the way. USA 3000 now flies to and from Fort Myers, St. Petersburg, Clearwater, and Fort Lauderdale, Hollywood, servicing 11 different cities, all at our same low fares starting at $59. No peanuts served here. For a low fare with a real meal and in-flight entertainment, choose USA 3000. USA 3000 has simple fare rules regardless of the fare. There are no Saturday night stays and no round trip required on any fare. They have a low change fee, and this is the part you're really going to love. Even if you miss your flight, you don't lose your fare. So what are you waiting for? With fares this low and rules this simple, you can afford to take someone with you. Call now to make your reservations at 1-877-USA-3000. That's 1-877-USA-3000. You can also book online at www.usa3000.com or call your local travel agent. USA 3000 Airlines knows the way. USA 3000 now flies to and from Fort Myers.
We don't need to do that twice, so once is enough. We're back, and we're joined by award-winning travel writer Kay Fernandez. And good morning, Kay, and welcome.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on the show.
It's a pleasure, and I hope we have you on many, many more times. I just loved your great train travel story. You know, the incurable romantic that I am, while reading and I found myself not wanting it to end. And train travel has always been, fascinating to me, and traveling through Switzerland has to be the ultimate journey.
I love train travel. In Europe, rail Europe is just, it's spectacular.
And so tell us about Switzerland. Tell us about that, the ride on that great train through a magnificent area.
Switzerland is just unparalleled as far as the scenery is concerned. I'm a Floridian, and I'm used to a lot of flat places, so when I see the Swiss Alps, I find it just awesome.
Exactly.
And there are 34 peaks, I think, throughout the entire country. I've been both on the Glacier Express and the Golden Pass, although Switzerland has 12 different scenic trains. As you can well imagine, there are just so many scenic trains throughout the country because it is indeed just a country full of spectacular scenery.
Now, there's a good reason, historically, why European rails are so good. And in your article, you mentioned that, you know, at the time the steam engine was invented, Europe was pretty well settled with major cities that are already intact. So when the railway developed, it came to serve those cities. And when you look at the geography of Europe, they're all much closer, as we know, even for driving,
exactly.
While the distance in the U.S. are much greater.
Yes. The rail system throughout Europe has about 160 miles of excellent rails. Rail Europe now goes to 21 countries, and I've been on your Rail Europe system in about 9 different countries. And I've never, ever been disappointed as far as trains. They're punctual, they're comfortable, they're very easy as far as accessibility, convenience. All the signage is very easy to understand, even if you do not speak the language. It's still very simple.
Now, did you use the EuroPasses while you do this? Because obviously that's a popular thing.
Yes, I always get a Rail Europe Pass, and depending on which countries I'm in, For example, in Switzerland, you have the Swiss Pass and the Flexi Pass.
Right.
You can also get a combination of passes with the France-Switzerland Pass, also the Austria-Switzerland Pass, where you can traverse both countries.
Yeah, and I mean that's certainly things that people should research, and there is a website that you can go, and we'll give that towards the end of this segment. But tell us a little bit more. I mean, it's a very interesting story. Why don't you take the lead on this rather than me jump all over on it?
As far as the Golden Pass, it goes between. Between Lucerne and Interlaken. And
then you had the Glacier Express as well.
Exactly. The Glacier Express takes you from Zermatt to St. Moritz, and St. Moritz is known as, I guess, kind of a chic town, but it also has a lot going on as far as outdoor activities. You're near the national park. It's just a lovely area.
And you mentioned, which I find interesting, is it's the world's slowest express train, and that this this adventure that takes you through 7.5 hours and goes over 291 bridges and through 91 tunnels, crosses the magnificent 6,708-foot high Overlap Pass. What more can anybody ask for?
If you don't want to take the entire trip, the 7.5 hours, obviously you can take a portion of it. But if those 7.5 hours, you'd be surprised how fast that goes, because you're looking at this spectacular scenery. You're looking at the forest and the mountains and the mountain streams and the Swiss villages. And it's just a typical picture postcard place with alpine villages, and it's pretty neat to see.
And food, of course.
Always food. When you take the Golden Pass train and you are in Montreux, you have the option of taking the chocolate train. And since I'm a chocoholic,
tell us about the chocolate train.
It's a wonderful experience to take. It's a day adventure, and it leaves Montreux, and it goes to Gruyère, which is the home to the very famous
cheese. Yeah.
And of course, you do taste the cheese, and it gives you a good palate pleasing adventure there before you get back on the train, and then you go to Brock, and you go to the Cayenne Nestle factory there, where you also are able to taste the chocolate.
How wonderful. Did you do a lot of tasting?
I always taste a lot of chocolate.
I can identify with that. Anyway, Bob and I, Bob Fisher and I had spent about 8 hours, 7-8 hours on a train going through the Copper Canyon, and although we spent most of it in the bar cart taking in the views, it was very comfortable. And trains, I think more and more people need that experience. You're going to go to Europe. It's much easier to take a train than it is to drive. You don't need directions. You just have to know when to get on and off.
Absolutely. To me, it's the best way to travel. I think I've only rented a car in Europe one time. Americans sometimes don't realize what a great adventure the train travel can be. And the cities in Europe are so very close together. The countries are so very close together. So train travel is a very hassle-free way to travel. You don't have to worry about your car or following directions or messing with your map or any distractions.
Right.
And you can just enjoy the scenery along the way.
And then you mentioned in Interlaken, it's one of the strongholds for outdoor offerings in Switzerland.
Yes, there's much to do. Interlaken is a very charming town, and it's very easy to walk around there. It's situated between two beautiful, all the lakes, of course, in Switzerland are very crystal clear, but it's situated between lakes, and Interlaken literally means between two lakes.
Right.
And you can mountain climb or do bungee jumping or all sorts of trails. There's just a plethora of things to do as far as outdoor activity. And I think that's true of much of Switzerland because, you're surrounded by mountains and valleys, so you're not literally climbing mountains all the time, but you can take advantage to the valley areas as well.
And then you went to Lucerne.
Yes, Lucerne is a larger city, but it still has a very nice old feel to it. There's parts of the old town that are still there and cobblestone streets, very excellent shopping and restaurants. And going out on Lake Lucerne is a lovely trip, too. And if you have a Rail Europe pass, you are able to take that free boat ride out on Lake Lucerne. And that's true of all the lakes in Switzerland,
yeah,
if you have a rail pass.
Yeah, that's a nice bonus. Now, then you say that the Golden Pass ends at Lucerne, but that you can take other scenic train trips. Now, tell me a little bit about that, if you will.
Well, there are 12 different scenic train trips in Switzerland. And depending on where you are, whether you're in Zurich or Lucerne or St. Moritz, you can get on one of the other scenic trains. You can go into southern Switzerland, and it's almost a Mediterranean feel because you have palm trees and olive trees, and you're almost at the Italian border, so you have a lot of Italian influence in that respect. So that is quite an adventure, and then you're leaving some of the mountains. But the Swiss Alps are just spectacular, and I recommend anyone ever having the chance to see them to go, and hopefully by train.
What would you say? I mean, I'm always asked this question in a number of different ways. Is what would you say your highlight of this trip was? Or is that a tough question? It's always a tough question for me because I love it all.
I like the smaller towns of Interlaken.
Yeah, I
found it quite charming. I like Montreux. It was a town, a quiet town, but it's spectacular as far as beauty is concerned. It's you know, surrounded by mountains. When you descend into Montreux, you're surrounded, and it's just a very lovely place to see.
Now, you did mention that it's the 75th anniversary this year of the Glacier Express. Now, that's quite extraordinary.
It is indeed. And because of the tunnel that they built in 1982, the train now runs year-round, even though in the wintertime you just have an option of one time a daily as far as the train travel, whereas in the summertime it runs about five times a day. But at least you do have the opportunity to go in the winter. As a Floridian, I'm not much of a real cold weather person, but I have heard that it's just absolutely spectacular in the wintertime.
And so it started in June of 1930, and it was completed, the completion of the 9.5-mile Furker Tunnel, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, in June 1982,
right.
Then made it possible, as you said, the Glacier Express to operate year-round.
Absolutely.
So that's how that all came about, and it's hard to believe that it goes back 75 years, doesn't it?
It does, and you know, actually, the rail system was really organized in 1910 in Europe. And today's Rail Europe is an incarnation from the early 1960s, and it has just evolved to a very sophisticated system now that's just extremely comfortable. And as far as comfort, you know, the seats are very comfortable.
Uh-huh.
Your onboard experience is very comfortable.
Even in the economy classes?
There's first class and second class. And second class, you still have the same amenities and the same views that you have in first class, although in first class you do have the option of being in one of the more panoramic cars or in one of the glass dome cars.
Now, just one other thing we should touch on is you have an 800 number in here that I guess it's for the rail passes. It's 877-257-2887
right.
In the U.S., And from what I can see, you're highly recommending these various train passes, which we've all tend to use from time to time. But there's one other very important thing that I think I almost missed, and that is that with the Swiss Travel System Family Card, the children under 16 travel for free when accompanied by a parent.
Right, and the Swiss travel system is the only country that does offer this as far as children under 16 traveling free. And I think it's excellent, an excellent way for our entire family to go.
I couldn't agree more. Kay, thank you very, very much for joining us today.
Thank you.
It's a very, very interesting story. And we look forward to chatting with you again soon.
I enjoyed it. Thanks again.
Yes, well, you're welcome. Bye for now. Well, that was Kay Fernandez, and it's really a great article. You can go to our site, ttrn.com, and you'll find it there, and you can read it in detail and look at the pictures. We'll be back with Mr. Bob Fisher in just a flash.
Totally gone native. Totally playful. Totally never tried that before. Totally Club Med. Introducing the new Total All-Inclusive Club Med with unlimited drinks, all-day dining, world-class accommodations, 64 sports and activities, all gratuities and more for a totally great price. So you can totally forget your wallet. Call today for a totally unlimited, totally together, totally barefoot time. Book now and save on a 7-night total all-inclusive vacation to Club Med in the Caribbean, Bahamas, or Mexico. Call today. You'll totally want to do it again.
Oh, yeah. I'm a traveling man, fading out of sight. All over the world, and in every port, I own the heart of at least one lovely girl.
So that was very appropriate to introduce our next guest, Mr. Bob Fisher, who really needs no introduction to our audience. He's a man that's been around and doing many things for the show. And good morning, Bob.
Good morning, Roy. I didn't realize you were such a good old boy.
Oh, you know,
drifting down the river.
It was a great story.
I think a lot of people should have the experience of just drifting down a river with you.
Oh,
you know,
for 3.5 hours.
Learn a thing or two, and you know, and you're going to be talked about in the Finger Lakes area for a long time, I think.
Well,
and if anyone's planning a wedding, they'll probably just say, you know, you better be prepared for this Floridian to just drop in.
Well, I left my card. And a little note on the back saying, if you need any West Virginia cousins to fill in the gaps, I can dress up. I've got all kinds of outfits we can throw together. But Dave was great and Ralph was great, and it was really nice to hear them say how much they enjoyed themselves. And that's what this is all about. That's what travel is about. That's what sharing your life with people is all about. And what could have turned into a disappointing no fish situation with four poles there turned into one of the most marvelous adventures, and it was so nice to hear them say how they appreciated it, because I know, in spite of what they said, they were really looking forward to the Hooters girls.
But you know, at risk of repeating myself, Talking Travel, as you know, I've told you so many times, is basically grassroots to the world. And that is exactly the kind of grassroots experience that all of us who contribute to this show have, wherever we go. And, of course, that's what I'm going to talk about today.
And, in fact, before we get to your subject, I know you're going off. You're especially busy today, and we appreciate you taking the time, because you're off to India in the next few days.
Tomorrow, actually.
Yeah, and I guess you got my note that there's a pending airport strike.
Yeah, I got your note about that.
I'm sure that pleased you.
You know, when you travel, you got to be prepared.
Got
to
go with the flow.
Be flexible, go with the flow. And when you're going to a place like India, where I think the grassroots experience is going to be
probably
the most intense I've ever had, but I'll let you know that when I get back.
Well, let's go to Rain in Hiroshima story. It's a very touching story, and why don't you start it off, Bob?
Well, in many ways, it's like so many destinations that are so important on this planet that one doesn't know where to begin. The title is Rain in Hiroshima, and it doesn't matter whether you say Hiroshima or Hiroshima. I tend to say Hiroshima. It's slightly closer to the way the Japanese pronounce the name. But Hiroshima is very much, of course, a symbol for one of the most the momentous moments in human history. We were traveling in Japan for about a month, and obviously on our itinerary was Hiroshima. And I can remember being, again, you talked about trains. The trains in Japan are absolutely superb. But I was on the train on the way to Hiroshima, and I started to feel this incredible kind of tension. And I was saying to myself, you know where you're going, just don't go there as a tourist, because the last thing I wanted to do was to visit Hiroshima as the stereotypical tourist, taking pictures and just not getting engaged. Well, as it turned out, there was no way that was going to happen anyway. And it partially had to do with many things, the weather being one of them. Do you remember when you were in high school English class and your English teacher used to teach you things about imagery and metaphors and symbols? And do you remember the mention of the term pathetic fallacy?
Exactly.
Which is a term that I think was very much my experience in Hiroshima. And pathetic fallacy is when we, as human beings, we transpose our emotions onto inanimate objects or to nature in general. You know, we use terms like angry clouds or cruel wind.
On the other side of it, my English teacher used to say, "You're pathetic."
Yeah, but she'd never drifted down a river.
Susquehanna
with you.
You got that right.
You know, but anyway, when we arrived in Hiroshima and the Peace Park in Hiroshima, it was raining, a very soft rain, and I now know that subconsciously, what, and this ends up, I think, in the article, what I was sensing really were the tears of humanity. And Hiroshima, whether it's Hiroshima or many other destinations that we visit, Holocaust museums, concentration camps, or World War One battlefields, I remember doing that.
And the World War Two graveyard.
Even, you know, Pearl Harbor. These are important places for us to go, but when we go there, we learn an awful lot about ourselves as individuals, but also as a species. And there is a kind of a difficult part to the visit, and that is a kind of mourning for ourselves, for our potential as human beings to cause harm. And Hiroshima, of course, is that moment in time that changed the course of human history. And it really brought home to us, I think, for in a very big way, our awareness of our species, to our potential to not only destroy but to obliterate, and that's a very heavy duty concept to come to terms with. But going to Hiroshima, I think I use the word incongruence. It's a very contradictory, paradoxical experience, because you visit the Peace Park, which is a beautiful location. It is very deliberately laid out in such a way as to create a sense of peace and tranquility.
Which I think only the Japanese have that knack to do, with a garden around, you know, a destroyed structure.
Very much so. But it's at the same time, you are totally, that peace and tranquility reinforces your awareness of what happened here, and what happened here that, as I said, changed the course of human history. And I remember when Diana, my wife, and I crossed the bridge into the Peace Park, there was this feeling of kind of being detached and separate, but then there was I was being drawn towards this place. And you know how you're drawn towards I don't know. It's very difficult if you're driving along and there's a car accident. It's very difficult not to stop and look, because there, but for the grace of God, go I. There, you know, there is human suffering, and we are drawn to human suffering because I really believe that that as a human species, that we do have an innate goodness in us that recognizes evil, that recognizes human suffering. And, you know, August 6, 1945, at 8:15 in the morning, that first atomic bomb, the first time it was ever used against humans, and it dropped on Hiroshima, and the entire city, of course, was leveled. And this is the spot. And when you first arrive in the park, one of the first things you see is what has come to be known as the Atomic Dome. And this is a burnt-out building that was at the exact epicenter of where the bomb fell. And in a way, it has a very cruel beauty to itself, because it's a shell. And it's almost the key monument in Hiroshima to that day when over 78,000 people died instantly. And by the following December, 140,000 had died, and eventually 200,000.
Now, the A-bomb dome, was it the only major structure that survived this?
It was the only major structure, everything else. And I don't know why. And it was, what it was an, it was a trade exhibition hall with literally a dome. And
right.
If you look at my article, the very first picture there.
It's amazing.
The building is beside the river.
And this lovely garden.
And the lovely gardens, yes. And we were, in a sense, we were, it's so difficult to find the words, but it was, we were fortunate to be one of very few on, because it was early in the morning and it was a rainy day and it was a kind of a misty day, and so there weren't too many people there. It was also, I believe we were there in the off season. So the whole place had this very ephemeral quality to it. And you really had the opportunity to stop and think and feel. I remember walking across the bridge that, very ironically, the bridge originally had been built in a T-shape. Well, for, you know, the aircraft that dropped the bomb, it was the perfect target. I mean, for the pilot, you know, there is exactly where to drop it. Now, there are many historic, a lot has been written on the dropping of that bomb. Should it have been done? Should it not? And I'm not going to go there. I don't need to go there. I think it's, you know, everyone's right and responsibility to decide for themselves what that event really was all about. But I think when we visit places like this, and this is a World Heritage Site, and whether it's, you know, the battlegrounds, the war cemeteries of the First, Second World War, or whatever, I think...
It's a very moving moment.
It is a time for us all to really start to put things in perspective.
And reflect on ourselves.
Right.
You know.
And these kinds of destinations are very much, they have a timelessness to them. And also, I don't know whether this is a contradiction in terms, but you also feel very much out of time. And that in itself allows you to... It's the greatest history lesson, and as you and I have discussed many times, travel is the most experiential form of learning, and especially of learning history.
Well, Bob, we have just about less than a minute, but
yeah.
there was the Peace Clock Tower that you mentioned. Oddly, the time at 8:15 every morning, the chimes ring, which I thought was...
Right.
Was wonderful.
And it's that sound again, and it's like a universal appeal. And the one that I enjoyed the most was, enjoyed, what a word, is the Bell of Peace, this enormous bronze bell. And you are invited to pull back this log, the large log, and let it hit against the bronze bell, and the resonance goes on for almost a minute. And this, it's every traveler's way of sending a wish that all nuclear arms and wars be gone. I could go on and on. The rest of the information is in the article.
And it's up on our site, and the wars to be gone would be a wonderful thing. And it is a wonderful, wonderful article, Bob, and we've got to run.
Okay, well,
I'll be
talking to you soon,
okay.
And I may try and talk to you from India.
Oh, that'd be nice.
If I can get through to you.
Okay, we got to run, going to break.
Okay,
talk to you
bye-bye.
Later. Thanks, Bob. That was Bob Fisher, and the article is really a marvelous article. We're going to go to break, and when we come back, Johnny Jet.
USA 3000 Airlines knows the way. USA 3000 now flies to and from Fort Myers, St. Petersburg, Clearwater, and Fort Lauderdale, Hollywood, servicing 11 different cities, all at our same low fares starting at $59. No peanuts served here. For a low fare with a real meal and in-flight entertainment, choose USA 3000. USA 3000 has simple fare rules regardless of the fare. There are no Saturday night stays and no round trip required on any fare. They have a low change fee, and this is the part you're really going to love. Even if you miss your flight, you don't lose your fare. So what are you waiting for? With fares this low and rules this simple, you can afford to take someone with you. Call now to make your reservations at 1-877-USA-3000. That's 1-877-USA-3000. You can also book online at www.usa3000.com or call your local travel agent.
Or call Johnny Jet at johnnyjet.com, and he'll tell you where to go. Good morning, Johnny.
Good morning.
How are you this early? Pardon?
Good. How you doing?
I'm doing terrific. I just want to say how great it was. Bob Fisher and I were talking about it, how much fun it was to see you over up in Buffalo or at Niagara. And as much as we've talked, we really never had a time to spend much time together, but it was really super, and it was a great trip.
Yeah, it was a nice surprise.
Yeah, it was. And when I saw your name, I was going to call. I was going to send you an email, but I said, I'm just going to walk up and say, you know, is this another Johnny Jet lookalike, or is it the real guy himself?
Right, I finally get to meet Roy.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, I think there's a picture of the three of us up on our site that Bob had taken. I don't know if he forwarded it on to you, but I'm the little guy with the red face. Anyway, where have you been here the last, when I last talked to you in Buffalo, you were heading to Ireland, I believe.
I was. You know, I got to the airport in Buffalo at 12 o'clock for my 12:55 flight.
Right.
On JetBlue.
Right.
And it was delayed 5 hours.
Oh, no.
So I could have hung out more.
Exactly.
So then I had an international connection. And right when I landed at JFK, I go, there's no way I'm going to make it. I have to go to the Terminal 4, and I was in Terminal, I think it's 5. And I looked at the clock, I go, there's no way. So I called them up, and they go, oh, good news, your flight's delayed. So my flight to Ireland was delayed 5 hours.
And
I had 2 5-hour delays.
Plus a 7-hour flight.
This is only like 6. It was actually under 6.
Well, that's because you kick your feet in the back.
But, you know, it gave me time to smooth the agents, try to get business class.
Yeah.
It didn't happen.
Right.
But I did get a whole row to myself and coach, which was even better than business class.
Right. So you got to get... You got to get
what I don't like about Flying Aer Lingus is that, you know, they stop in Shannon.
Yeah, I know they do.
Dublin.
Well, you know, that's kind of a funny requirement. I don't know. It goes back to where I think the Russians bought Shannon Airport, and it had something to do with the fuel and agreements, because, you know, for many years we were trying to do nonstop flights into Dublin and some of these places, but they've always got the Shannon stop. Now, that's okay if you're going to Shannon, and there's some fun places like Bunratty Castle and all of those with beautiful gals with beautiful angelic voices, but it is. I mean, what do you need that for when you're already tired and you want to get the heck off the airplane?
Yeah, but you know, I think from LA, I think LAX and Chicago, they don't stop in Shannon.
That could very well be.
But
yeah.
From JFK and you know, Boston, they definitely stop. But what was really surprising that on the way home, you know, we stop again in Shannon, but you go through U.S. Customs in Shannon.
Oh, you're pre-clear now. Okay.
In Shannon. So when I get when I landed at JFK, I did not have to go through customs.
I didn't have to go through
immigration. I had to go through customs. I had to just grab my bag and hand my slip.
Right.
I did everything else in Ireland.
Well, and the one big plus about Shannon, of course, is the duty-free shopping. I don't know how much of a bargain is anymore, but there's a lot of shopping there, that's for sure.
Actually, in the airport where I was, there wasn't really any shopping.
Really?
There was one gift shop, and it was closed. But in Dublin, there's a lot of duty-free shopping.
Yeah, well, and, you know, I don't know. You used to be able to get a bottle of booze for a buck or two and save some money,
like
but that those days are gone forever. I'm not too sure if it isn't more expensive in the duty-free shops.
Actually, a lot of people from Ireland now go to France to get booze because it's so much cheaper. Because Ireland really taxes it a lot.
All right, so the last time I saw you, you were heading to the airport, and you could have come back and gone to the closing dinner, which was fabulous. They had a big band there and lots of dancing. I got to dance with Miss North Carolina and a few others. I did the Johnny Jet sort of roll, this is our dance. And it was great. So you went Buffalo, you got to Ireland, and tell us about that.
I got to Ireland, and I was actually supposed to jump on a plane to France to go to my buddy's wedding, but since I was delayed so much, I said I missed that. So I didn't go to my buddy's wedding. So instead, I hung out in Dublin.
Oh, you did?
Train to Cork.
Did somebody hold you by your ankles?
Yeah, I did kiss the Blarney Stone.
And all the change dropped out of your pocket?
No change dropped out, but I did. You know, I can't stop talking. I have to get the gab now.
Yeah, you never had it before, right?
But in Dublin, you know, I did the Guinness Beer Tour, which is probably the most number one attraction in Dublin.
Yeah.
And I've got to tell you, it's a ripoff.
It is.
€14. It's really a museum. It's not in a brewery.
Right.
Because 2 weeks before that, I was in St. Louis, and I did the Budweiser Tour.
Right.
And that was free.
Yeah, I mean...
And free parking.
Exactly.
In Dublin, it costs €14, which is really like 18... $18-19.
And you can buy a lot of beer for that.
And you get one beer at the end.
Huh, big deal, right?
You get a beer or a soda.
Right. Well, you probably had the soda. You're not a drinker.
But the building is beautiful, but it's just not worth €14 unless you're, you know, a big-time Guinness fan.
Well, you know, the first time that I went to Cork and visit the Blarney Stone, we were in, I can't remember if we were in Shannon or somewhere like that, and I looked at a map. Now, this goes back quite a number of years, the first time I went there, and it was an Aer Lingus fam trip. And it, oh, look, at 90 miles, hell, we can do that in an hour and a half. Well, we get in the car, and about 5 hours later, you know, we weren't even halfway there. We pull into a gas station, and after he gasses it up, I hand him a credit card. And he looks at it, the fellow looks at it, and he says, oh, he says, would you look at this? He says, what a lovely thing. And would you look at all the colors now? He said, but what would you have me be doing with it?
That's funny.
Is that typical Irish or what, you know?
Wow. I took the train. I took Irish Rail all around the country.
Yeah. Now, how did that work? Was that did they have a rail pass just like part of the Eurail system?
Actually, I was on a Eurail pass.
Right.
So I took it, you know, it's a three-hour train ride to Cork. Then I went back to Dublin the same day. And we had lunch and dinner or breakfast and dinner on the train.
Right.
We got to sit up in first class, and it was, you know, good food, pretty good food. And then, you know, a couple of days later, took the train down to Wexford, same thing.
Yeah, we just, earlier in the show, we had Kay Fernandez who was on, and she talked about her trip through Switzerland on the Glacier Express, which was... really, I mean, can you imagine going through that beautiful country on a train? I don't know if you've done it. I haven't, but
I did it this summer.
Amazing, isn't it?
I went to Vermont. Oh, that is top, I think it's top seven trains in the world.
Yeah.
Train ride.
Yeah. And the passes are interchangeable, I believe, as you said.
If you use a Eurail pass with that, there's an additional fee.
Oh, okay.
$60 round trip.
Is that what it is?
Because I had a Eurail pass this summer, too, and they charged me $60 extra. Because that's a private railroad. The Glacier Express is private.
Now, there had to be a highlight of the trip.
Oh, definitely. The highlight was actually in a pub in Wexford and listening to these old-time Irish guys sing.
Yeah, I love it.
You know, they were just with their buddies, and they just started, you know, one got up after another and just started singing, and it was I was like, oh, my God, I actually recorded some of it on my little camera.
Did you?
I'm going to make a little Johnny Depp video.
That's great. You know, in Ireland, they have a saying, if you're in the pub, you either tell a story, do a dance, or sing a song. And that's just kind of traditional. Now, a lot of these traditions are kind of falling by the wayside, but, you know, what a lovely thing. It gets you in there and gets you to participate. And even in the States, I love nothing better than sitting in an Irish pub with some good live Irish music, and, you know, and it's just beautiful. The music's beautiful, the beat's beautiful, and...
I agree. I had no idea. It was my first time to Ireland.
Oh, it was? Okay.
Yeah. So it was a real treat for me. I didn't know much about the country.
Of course, Dublin's changed a lot over the years now. When people were leaving, all their high-tech people were leaving, coming to the States for jobs. Now they're all going back. And, of course, things have gotten a lot more expensive, and real estate has obviously gone up like it has other places, but a lot more in that area than it had ever before. In fact, they were worried. I mean, they were losing their youth.
Right.
But
the Irish language was dying, and now it's coming back.
Ah, Gaelic. Did you get to speak a little? Did you learn some of the words, did you, while you were there?
Slate.
Aha. And tell our audience what that is.
But that's about it. It's not an easy language to learn.
No, it's not at all. It's very guttural.
I can barely speak English, so I have a hard time with Gaelic.
Right. So you spent most of the time, you were in Dublin then the whole time?
No, I was actually, you know, I went to Cork, worked for...
Well, other than that, yeah, okay.
Then we jumped on the Irish Ferry,
which
was part of the Eurorail pass. You get like a 50% discount.
Right.
So we took an Irish Ferry across, 18 and a half hours.
Good Lord.
Cherbourg, France. Cherbourg.
Cherbourg is lovely, isn't it? What?
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Beautiful little fishing village. And then from there, just jumped on a three-hour train to Paris. Hung out in Paris.
I've been talking to people. The Paris thing comes up all the time. And, you know, everybody, you know, there's so many people that come back with a bitter experience. And I've spent so many wonderful times in Paris, but, you know, the waiters, if you get by the waiters being sort of snooty, looking down their nose at you, and I know the French government has been pressing really hard to turn all of that image around, but Paris is a wonderful city.
Oh, it is wonderful. And you know what? The people are wonderful, most of them. It all depends on the attitude you give them. If you're going to act like a dumb American and not say hello when you walk into a store, or you know, just not even try to speak the language or have a smile, they're definitely going to give you attitude. Some will give you attitude anyway. People are people.
Right.
But I found it, you know, I found the waiters excellent this time. And, you know, a lot of people are speaking English, especially the younger generation.
Yeah, of course. What where'd you stay?
You know, I stayed in a couple different hotels because I bounced around. I went to another island. I went out to Île de Ré, near La Rochelle.
Right.
That's where a lot of salt marshes are. But I stayed at the Hotel Mercure, which is next to the Gare de Lyon train station. It's like part of it. And that was a three-star hotel. It was easy. And then I also stayed at a youth hostel. It was the first time I ever stayed at a youth hostel.
Yeah, I've never done that, but I mean, I've talked to a lot of people who have had the experience. What was your take?
I loved it.
Did you?
You know, I mean, the bed I definitely didn't feel safe in or clean in.
Right.
I slept with my clothes on.
Right. and your hand on your wallet.
You know, they had free internet.
Right.
There's a lot of young people around. They're all fun and.
Right. It throws everybody together.
There was no stuffy people there.
Yeah, for sure. And it brings everybody together. It's just like, you know, going into a neighborhood and somebody introducing you to a bunch of people, and you just sit around and chat and have fun.
If I was going to travel by myself, youth hostel is the way to go.
Yeah.
Not only is it cheap, but you get to meet people.
Right. What do you got in the way of, do you have a chance to look up any interesting websites or webcam? Or?
I do.
Good.
Let's see, I have one. Actually, they're all kind of... I had this week in my newsletter, I had the Alamo and Ketchikan, Alaska.
Yeah,
the problem is they give you these really long web addresses. I'm not going to attempt to tell you what they are.
Right.
One is earthcam.com.
Right.
And then type in Ketchikan, and you'll see the Alaska one.
Right.
But, you know, I get all kinds of newsletters and emails, and I just got airfarewatchdog.com.
Right.
they have fares right now for people who are in Chicago and Detroit and Denver and Minneapolis to Honolulu, round trip 282.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Well, that's a good one.
Unpublished fare, so people got to jump on it right now.
I've never heard of that site either.
Airfare Watchdog. It was a guy who started the New York blog, Airfare blog.
Right.
Okay. It's become so popular. Now it's nationwide.
All right, we just got a couple more seconds. What else do you have there?
Oh, I got everything.
I know you've got everything. I carried your book all the way to the Buffalo. Well, actually, Bob had it, and he handed it to me. And I never even thought to stop to get you to autograph it for me. But,
oh, my gosh. You get all the way there?
I know. That's a heavy book. Exactly.
I'll have to come down and visit you.
Yeah, well, you need to do that. I mean, the weather, we're getting into the really serious part of our weather now, and it's going to be terrific. Johnny, we're going to run. We've just about run out of time. I want to thank you once again for joining us and to tell you how great it was seeing you up in Buffalo. And did you get to go on the Wet and Wild trip?
I did wet, but not wild. I got to do the Native American and the other thing.
That surprised me. I'm surprised you didn't go for the whole Megillah.
You know, I was going to Ireland that night. I didn't feel like it.
Yeah, or broken arm or something. Right?
Yeah.
Johnny, great talking to you. Talk to you again soon. Bye-bye. Well, that was Johnny Jett. And we're just about running out of time here, so I'm just going to say this is Roy Lowe. Well, let me tell you who's on next week. We've got Bonnie Neely with Rome during the shoulder season. That should be interesting. Brian Matthews, searching for fossils on England's southern shores. Tune in next week to Travel Talk Radio Network, and this is Roy Lowe saying bye till next week. And Talking Travel is brought to you by the Travel Talk Radio Network, broadcast live from Florida Sun Coast 24/7, online at ttrn.com. Now back to our regular programming.